Mike Rabinovich here, and this is the Modelo's Conversations with Data Warehouse Experts podcast series. Our mission in these podcasts is to speak to the best minds in the data warehouse and BI space, and to get their take on the state of the business and find out what they think the future holds. We are also committed to do it in a way that adds value to tech professionals, while at the same time is clear and compelling for the business managers and executives they collaborate with every day. This podcast is brought to you by 7W Data, your go-to portal for all things data. Subscribe free for the latest news and events at www.data.com. That's www.7wdata.com. Follow on Twitter at 7WData. In today's episode, it is my pleasure to speak with Mark Tabladio, lead data scientist for Microsoft Services. He works as part of a global team with Fortune 500 companies, global leading institutions, and high-tech startups toward digital transformation using advanced analytics. Welcome, Mark.
Thanks, Mike. I'm glad to be here today.
Thanks for taking the time, and I'd like to begin by asking you to tell us a little bit about your background, where you started out, and the journey that led you to Microsoft.
Sure. So I'm working in the area of data science and artificial intelligence, and my path started with my academic career pursuing education through a doctorate at Georgia Tech, applied statistics and a lot of formal training. And after that, having many years in client-facing roles, mostly through my own small business where I was partnering with other companies, partnered with Microsoft partners, SaaS consulting, and finally, now also being very visible in the community. So I have been doing a lot of presentations for user groups, both in the SaaS area and also Microsoft area. Hiring manager saw me some years ago and had contacted me on LinkedIn, and that conversation actually sent me a message on a Thursday. On Friday, I called him back, and we were already having a conversation. So it just shows the power of networking, you know, where people know you from presentations and involvement in user groups.
I was actually going to say that you're pretty prolific on LinkedIn, and that's how we find out about you, and that's how you and I connected. So, you know, I think for all the folks out there, if you want to see somebody really leveraging LinkedIn, check out Mark's profile, because I think you do a really awesome job on that.
Thank you.
So my next question, where have you seen the most significant changes in the data warehouse and BI space over, say, the last 5 or so years?
Right. So a lot of people had gone to data warehousing as certainly an analytics solution. And it, you know, it's got a different focus from a traditional OLTP database. Similar or identical technology, but people are needing the ability to provide analysis and analytics more specifically. What I've seen specifically in the last 5 years, we have a greater adoption. We see a lot of new data structures. Microsoft has a column store technology, which is now propagated, and then also has made a lot of improvements in SQL Server to support analytics and data analysis. I have to call out the cloud. Microsoft now has taken a lot of technologies and made them available to the cloud, which for a lot of companies is a way to reduce the barrier of entry. Years ago, someone would have to spec out a server and go through the whole process of getting that server set up. Many organizations still rely a lot on internal servers, and that is the solution that works for them. The cloud now provides an option for people to be able to spin up solutions in a different way.
In the course of your day-to-day activities, what are the key pain points that you observe businesses experiencing when it comes to data warehousing and ETL?
The core questions that I feel are add the most value are when we talk centrally about the word data. My work, of course, focuses on data science and that, those types of analytics, but often our solutions are not isolated just for advanced analytics. We, you know, when Microsoft talks to companies, and not just Microsoft, you know, I've worked with many partners, and so many consulting firms take the same approach. We want to help organizations with their wide range of data needs, and they may include, you know, so many different aspects, and it all comes back to data. What is that data? Understanding it, helping people to understand it, not just store it, because we have the technology to store it, but who understands it? Is it just a DBA? And we certainly want to expand that conversation beyond just the IT group, and especially in the business units.
Do you think that current data warehousing tools are adequately addressing these pain points that you've raised?
I feel like they are. They have shown significant popularity on the tools out there. And when we're talking about relational databases, let's just focus on that. Relational databases, in my view, are not going away. A number of reasons for that. First of all, the SQL language is very powerful in what it does. And for people to get the latest type of information, I value sources like Gartner and other third-party sources that look at the industry, and they look at it in specific ways. Microsoft tooling has improved, but I also use, and I also like third-party tools. I like Redgate, and I use it.
As a segue to you just mentioned, some pundits over the last few years have heralded the death of the data warehouse. I have an idea what your take on that is, but I'd love you to articulate it.
Sure. Okay. And, you know, I'm going to give two answers. First of all, in some cases, it should come to life. And in other cases, it probably should die, because maybe what people had wanted to do with that data warehouse could be satisfied another way. And as we see some technologies now available to connect local clients to cloud solutions, perhaps a data warehouse does not need to be built for a particular use. However, that doesn't mean that just because it's not doesn't satisfy a use case, that it doesn't satisfy an enterprise need. A lot of large organizations, and you know, people can check this by going to major organizations, talking to DBAs that are there, ask them directly, in large organizations, are they seeing the data warehouse die altogether in their organization? The answer will be no. In particular use cases, the answer might be yes. And it depends on what they're doing.
Now, a topic closer to your heart, how do you think AI will impact BI in general and data warehousing in particular?
Right. AI is very new, and I have been producing some material and content for Winelec Now on advancing on artificial intelligence. Let me give a definition of artificial intelligence. There are two definitions. One is a more focused definition that focuses on deep learning. It's more of a practical application, and that is one way people go. Another definition of artificial intelligence really is driven more by science fiction, and it has to do with autonomous thought and, you know, an aspiration for independent choices. And while technology is moving in that direction, and I have always, I've been saying for many years, science needs science fiction. That drives technology forward. When we talk about the applied side, you know, more of what people were doing with deep learning, that is going to be a complement. It's going to be a complement to what data storage is possible in data warehousing. So data warehousing will continue to be a needed source for providing that data. And on top of that, you know, I think these are complements. They're not, AI is not going to be a replacement at this time.
Do you think it will be at some point in the future in terms of taking data warehouses and what they can do to a different level?
One thing it could help with in the future would be some amount of dynamic data warehouse creation. However, I would have to see the use case. I mean, I can write a science fiction story for that, but the question is, here's the difference. And you can even see it in the definition difference I just gave. Is this a science fiction scenario, or can we write a business scenario? And there are some geniuses out there. You know, we see them in the news. These are the corporate leaders that are able to take a science fiction scenario and now turn it into a business case with an ROI, and then collect or attract investors to that idea, whether they're internal investors inside an organization or they're just venture capitalists. I don't have any stories specifically to recommend, but I do ask people to, you know, continue to watch the news for that. I do tweet, and I tweet a lot of stories that, you know, what people are doing around the industry, and there's a lot of creative things going on.
You mentioned the cloud in a couple of questions ago. So as more and more companies are adopting the cloud, what is the impact on their data warehousing projects going forward?
Right. I think that's an area where a lot of people are going to need some creative thinking. And I think it's going to depend on the architecture. It depends on what technology they're invested in. Some vendors are more about the cloud. Some vendors are more about on-premise. Microsoft happens to have what I believe are competitive technologies in both cloud and on-premise, leading to perhaps hybrid scenarios. So what is very interesting is that I talk to many architects at enterprise companies, and I know a lot of them are thinking about this question. As far as the driver, I feel like the people who are going to be most successful, again, are not going to be driving based on the technology alone. They are going to be driven mostly on their business cases. What are the use cases, and who are the personas? Personas and use cases are often what we try to surface when we talk to clients and on a first conversation.
So when you say personas for our listeners here that may not know what the definition is, what do you mean by that?
Persona would mean like a class of user, so like a group. And a persona in an organization, for example, might be a business analyst. A persona might be a consumer. And then it might even be more detailed than that. It might be a particular type of a consumer. And so identifying, who that consumer is, if it's an internal or an external persona, and then describing out what types of activities does that person do? How does that person perhaps interact with a data warehouse? And also starting to put numbers on it, for external, meaning maybe a customer, people can tabulate how much money is flowing, how much activity is flowing, how much data. So these use cases now can be translated into numbers, and the numbers can help guide architects in deciding where the priorities are based on the current workload and also expected.
In our projects at DeModulo, we find that technical teams are often quite knowledgeable. It's on the business side that we often find a knowledge gap. And I know you get a lot of FaceTime with clients. For those mid-level and C-suites, is there some kind of resource that you can recommend to them to help them on their BI journey so they can work better and understand more what the IT team is trying to do?
Sure. And so I'm going to answer this question in terms of Microsoft, and then I'm going to give a final answer that will apply for all technologies. Okay, for Microsoft, there are some Microsoft technology centers around the U.S. and around the world. And if you have one in your area, I would reach out to Microsoft and find out what's going there. They often have a lot of events. They're often free. And you can find out what Microsoft does. They also are encouraging more working sessions. Microsoft's now working with architects together to scope out solutions. And Microsoft also is very friendly to open source. And some people haven't got that memo yet, but 40% of the virtual machines now running on Azure are Linux. and .NET is now open source. So Microsoft is certainly, you know, partnering with open source solutions, and we often will partner and make solutions work with whatever technology you have. Inside the Microsoft world, also are conferences like Ignite, online free things like Microsoft Virtual Academy, Channel 9. There's some courses available on edX, and of course Microsoft certification. And then the final solution here for general is I generally recommend Meetup. There's a site called meetup.com. It is a commercial site, but as users, you don't pay. It's only paid for by organizers. Microsoft has Microsoft-related groups are in there, but then there's also so many other groups that are in so many areas related to data warehousing and technology. And even because my role does require require travel, what I will do sometimes is if I'm in another city overnight, I might look to see what's going on in Meetup on technologies, and I'll learn something new. And I've done that for Spark, I've done it for Julia, and so many technologies.
Big fan of Meetup. That was a very great call. We've met a lot of good contacts, and you meet a lot of smart people. It's a wonderful tool, so thank you for mentioning that. The next thing that I want to segue into, Mark, is a project, you know, something that's closer to our heart, and that's automation adaptability. What's your take on automation and the role it can play in making the design and build of data warehouses faster and more cost effective, especially given the tremendous increase in data flows and complexity that we are seeing today?
Yeah, so I think automation can help a lot. One of the, I'm going to call it one technology for Microsoft world is called BIML, and it's a language that allows people to use SSIS, which is integration services, and create those workflows more quickly and also replicate them. That's the idea that it has in mind. Now, just because there's an automator, one point I want to make here in automation is that these are not completely automated. They are what I call semi-automatic.
Right.
The analogy to weapons, a semi-automatic weapon shoots one bullet when you pull the trigger. It does not shoot multiple.
Right.
And it still requires people and with intelligence and design savvy to go in there and scale to a different level. True, that does require some different level of personal expertise, and some tools and technologies are available to do that, but we don't want to give people the idea that these data warehouses design themselves, because they do not.
Right. Yeah, we've come across that. Now I want to segue into something that's a little more non-tech and a little more fun, where we get to know you a little bit better. So my first question is, if you're ready.
Sure.
What is your current go-to TV shows that you watch consistently or binge on, as the case may be?
Okay. One thing that I consistently have been watching Nova since I was in high school.
Mm.
And Nova is, and you know, your viewers might be maybe around the world, but in the United States, there's a public broadcasting service. Nova is a science show, comes out of Boston, and a lot of the episodes are online, and over the years, Nova has informed my viewpoint on, you know, what's possible with science and just a lot of science, general science topics. So I think I have been kind of a general science geek for a long time, and you know, I find what Nova presents, you know, really gives some good insight into some recent topics. One of the recent shows I saw was a show about was about black holes.
Mm.
And more is being discovered every day about black holes. And by the way, when I was growing up, we thought everything, all the mass in the universe was represented by the periodic table. And I don't know if people realize this, but now we only I think the percentage is somewhere around 22% of the mass of the entire universe is through what we call ordinary matter, you know, atoms and electrons and neutrons and protons. The other two categories are dark matter, which tends to pull together, and dark energy, which tends to repel.
Right.
And the nature of dark matter and dark energy is something that scientists have only begun to understand since I left high school. So there's a lot of new science discoveries out there. And I think for anybody who is interested in science or wants to, you know, fill in their science education, You know, there's a lot going on.
Nova's been around forever. I remember it, right? Is that a PBS production?
It is PBS, yes, right. Public Broadcasting System. And again, these days, PBS is online, so people can just, even without television, see many episodes are online.
I think its longevity speaks as to its quality, because mm-hmm. nothing lasts that long, especially on television these days, if it's not really high-end. My next question for you, Mark, what is the best non-tech book you've read in the past few months that you would recommend or gift to your friends?
Sure. So I recently, you know, I'm now at the point of my career, I'm kind of senior level, and I often ask myself, you know, what should I be doing professionally? One of my friends recommended a book called Strengths Finder.
Oh yeah, I know of it. I have not read it. Yes.
Okay, so you've known of it. So it's called Strengths Finder 2.0. The authors are Tom Rath and Gallup. And what happens is when you buy the book, and it's about $20 US, when you buy the book, you get a code to take an online test. And the theory behind the book is that they have 34 different strengths. Now, these are not for general psychology. This is more for professional work. So you can think of a work situation. It doesn't need to be IT. It doesn't need to be data warehousing. But this just generally applies for any type of work situation. You take the test, and then it gives you your top five strengths. And the value of that information, it kind of guides you then to what areas that you are strong in, or what areas you need to focus on. And so the idea here is not to work on your weaknesses, but rather to know what your strengths are, and then to be able to use them and promote them when you talk to other people. So I'll quickly list, I have to open another document here to make sure that I remember all five strengths that happen to be on my list. Everybody's going to be different. There are no wrong answers. Okay, so that's what I definitely like about this book. And I don't see it on this list. But let's just leave it at, you know, I definitely recommend people take a look at Strengths Finder.
That's a great recommendation. I've heard really good things about it. I have not read it, but I will certainly add it to the podcast notes. Now, my last question as we wrap this up, where can our listener find out more about you on the web, your Twitter feed, your LinkedIn presence, or anywhere else they can reach out to you?
Right. Yeah, both of those. And, of course, those came out in our conversation. I'm on Twitter at MarkTabNet. So MarkTabNet. And, of course, LinkedIn. A lot of my old presentations are on SlideShare, but those are just going to be decks. And then, as I had mentioned earlier, I do have some commercial video available at Wintellect Now, which all previews, it shows the first few minutes of all the videos. So you can see the intro to all these videos and decide if you want to become a Wintellect Now subscriber just based on the intro, if you think that will add value.
And what's the URL for that, Mark?
Wintellect?
Yes.
So let me get that quickly.
You can spell that out.
Yeah, sure. Wintellect is Wintellect. And where you want to go for Wintellect Now, so that'll be wintellectnow.com. And that's the site with the video content. It was recently redesigned, and I do like the new design here. You go to the main page, and it has a picture of an electronic butterfly. Kind of representing a network.
And people can put your name in there, and it'll bring up all the interest of your videos.
Yes. I will show up in the author list, and I will show up in different series in there. So
awesome.
You can just look in there. In fact, I noticed that currently my videos are on the newest releases list. Of course, that will change as, you know, they release more videos, but it just happens that some new videos were released yesterday, so encourage people to look at that.
Thank you so much for your time today. Really appreciate it. It was really informative, and I can't wait to get the podcast out there, and hopefully we can do a round two down the road.
Great. Yeah, enjoyed it, Mike. Thanks.
Thank you.